Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everyone. I bet you're probably asking yourself, what the hell is this? This isn't part two of the family murders. Well, unfortunately, I have come down sick this week. You might be able to hear it in my voice, but attempting to record anything longer than 30 seconds is pretty much murder right now. So this week, in order to give you guys and gals something, I'm going to be releasing two short stories, which have only been available on Patreon for the past year or so. They're a couple of lighter UFO-related stories, but hopefully they'll help tide you all over until next week. Now, without any further ado, here's the episode. In the early morning hours of August 27th, 1979, a police officer was out on patrol near Stephen, Minnesota. This is a very small town near the Canadian border, and Marshall County Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson found himself patrolling the region alone just after 2 o'clock in the morning. As Johnson drove along a rural, unpopulated stretch of road, he recalls seeing a beam of light ahead of him, which began to contort itself in a very strange and peculiar way. As he would later recall in a taped police interview, quote, "I noticed a very bright, brilliant light, 8 to 12 inches in diameter, 3 to 4 feet off of the ground. The edges were very defined." Deputy Sheriff Johnson was driving at the time, and he witnessed this beam of light, which was originally dancing above the road in front of him, twist and contort itself. Eventually, this strange light began to grow, and he later recalled it quickly surrounding his entire police cruiser. Johnson states that soon, this light was coming from above him, eventually engulfing his entire car in the brightness. It almost felt like it was filling every pore, he said, and as it spread, Johnson recalls hearing the sound of glass breaking. But just like that, the deputy sheriff's memory stopped. He would not come back to his senses for close to an hour, during which time, he lost almost all recollection of what had transpired. This is the story of the Val Johnson incident. Several minutes after he had lost consciousness, 35-year-old Val Johnson began to stir inside of his patrol vehicle. Gone was the bright light that had been surrounding him what seemed just like moments ago, but the scene around Johnson had changed significantly. Johnson checked his wristwatch, but quickly realized that his watch and his vehicle clock had stopped entirely. Later estimates would state that both the watch and the clock had been stopped for just under 15 minutes, when their time was later synced up with other sources. It wasn't until Johnson began to recollect himself that he realized how much time had transpired without him knowing. From the moment he was originally enveloped in light to the moment he began to come back to his senses, roughly 39 minutes had gone by, and Johnson had no recollection of any of it. After regaining control of himself and his faculties, Val Johnson would call into the Marshall County Sheriff's Office for assistance.
407, what is your condition?
I don't know. Just hit my car. I don't know how to explain it. Strange.
Are you, what's your condition? Are you okay?
Something attacked my car. I heard the glass breaking and the locks, the brakes locked up. I don't know what's going on.
10-4, I'll get a hold of 406 Steven and send him on his way.
Deputies began to arrive at the scene just moments later, and would report that when they got there, Johnson's vehicle was splayed out sideways on the road, as if he had lost control while traveling at a high rate of speed. Leading up to the vehicle were approximately 800 feet of skid marks, indicating that he had attempted to stop while going pretty fast. And that seemed to jive with what Johnson would later tell his co-workers investigating the matter. Val Johnson's police cruiser, a 1977 Ford LTD, had received some pretty extensive physical damage, which would be noted by investigators at the scene, and even documented later on by outside sources who looked over the vehicle themselves. There was a noticeable dent in the hood of the car, and several of the headlights and emergency lights had been busted. The car's radio antennas were bent at varying angles, one at 90 degrees and the other at roughly 45 degrees, which was later theorized to have been caused by an intense burst of air pressure. Analysts would discover the remains of bugs on the antennas, which indicated that the damage had not been caused by hand. In addition, the vehicle's windshield had shattered. This did not appear to have been caused by either outside or inside forces. Rather, an expert would later determine that the windshield had been hit by three objects in a very short period of time, likely milliseconds, and it caused a weird, almost ripple-like shattering of the glass. Unfortunately, the expert and other analysts had no idea what these objects could have been, and there seemed to be no noticeable trajectory of them. To everyone at the scene that night, it seemed like something otherworldly had happened. Johnson himself seemed pretty aloof about the entire ordeal, being rather non-committal but sticking to his story, and he would unfortunately find himself the subject of much public attention over the next several months, attention that he neither appreciated nor ever wanted. Following the reporting of this incident, Marshall County Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson was taken to a nearby hospital, where he was treated for some minor bruising that had come from a supposed car crash. However, a later examination by a physician would reveal that Johnson had suffered some irritation to his eyes which appeared to be similar to welder's burns. This was generally only caused by exposure to extremely bright and burning light. In the case of welders, ultraviolet light, and stood out to everyone following the story as being something that would be nearly impossible to fake. Johnson was asked to recount the incident for local reporters and journalists, with the story eventually becoming a local and nationwide sensation. Here is Johnson several months afterwards, telling his version of events to producers of the television program That's Incredible.
The light was coming at me, it was extremely bright, the inside of the car lit up, I can remember that. And it was a very dazzling, brilliant appearance. Something did strike my vehicle. Something didn't want me there, apparently, or it was, you know, I can't put a judgment on it. I really don't know how to classify it. I can't classify it as an attack.
As you can imagine, this story became fodder for UFO enthusiasts and skeptics, who both wanted to use this story to confirm their beliefs in some fashion. Many called on Val Johnson to submit himself to a polygraph test in order to prove whether or not he was lying, but he simply brushed off these people. In his opinion, subjecting himself to a pointless polygraph test wasn't a good use of his time and, quote, would only satisfy people's morbid curiosity. From the get-go, Johnson would not feel the need to validate his own account. He stood by his version of events and was okay with not knowing what had happened. He never came forward and stated that he believed in aliens or anything like that, and it was only in the aftermath that his account was co-opted by the UFO movement that had been sweeping the country, and Val Johnson himself would never identify with these groups. A couple of weeks after the incident, on September 11th, 1979, Val Johnson appeared on ABC's Good Morning America, and he quickly seemed to regret that decision. The program exposed his story to an even larger audience and brought a lot of focus in on Johnson himself, a married 35-year-old father of three who was merely the deputy sheriff for a small county in northwestern Minnesota. He had always tried to avoid trouble and was now receiving more than his fair share. Speaking to a local paper shortly after the incident, Johnson stated, quote, "It's a tremendous strain on the family. My wife's run ragged with phone calls. I hope this drops in a barrel and rests quietly so we could go back to being parents, and I could go back to being a little town deputy sheriff." The The Val Johnson incident, as it became known, remains one of the most popular and credible UFO encounters from the 1970s. And by UFO, I don't even necessarily mean little green men in flying saucers or anything like that, but rather, something we simply don't have an explanation for. For a few days after Val Johnson's incident, sightings of similar lights were spotted nearby in Vermilion, South Dakota. This seemed to add to the credibility of Johnson's report, which again, was simply unexplainable by most metrics. No one really came forward with a credible explanation for what had happened to his vehicle that night, nor the burns to his eyes, which were truly unexplained. Alan Hendry, noted astronomer and UFOologist, was the main investigator for the Center of UFO Studies through the 1970s. Based out of Evanston, Illinois, Hendry traveled out to this sleepy corner of Minnesota and investigated Johnson's claim. This included observing Johnson's police cruiser, looking over the scene in question just days after the event happened, and speaking to Johnson himself. Alan Hendry personally concluded that Johnson's claim had merit, and he did not believe that Johnson had fabricated the event. It seemed like a genuine reporting of a UFO phenomenon.
The case is quite striking for the simple reason that a law enforcement officer has reported a sighting that left behind damage to his car and injury to his own eyes immediately following the experience. We learned of the Val Johnson case in much the same manner we learn of most of our sighting reports. The deputy of Marshall County contacted us directly via our 800 toll-free phone number, which we've issued to 10,000 police departments around the country. The biggest mystery about the Val Johnson case to me is trying to find one neat explanation for something that could behave the way he described, yet create the kinds of damage that we analyzed and discovered.
Yet, as expected, there were also many doubters. People who do not believe in any kind of this bizarre UFO activity, and would not be swayed by a single story. This included Philip J. Kloss, a journalist and UFO skeptic who often worked on debunking stories of UFO sightings. One of his famous quotes is as follows, quote, "I found that roughly 97-98% of the people who report seeing UFOs are fundamentally intelligent, honest people who have seen something, usually at night, in darkness, that is unfamiliar, that they cannot explain. The rest, Kloss believed, were frauds." This included Val Johnson. Kloss would write about the Val Johnson incident in his 1983 book, UFOs, The Public Deceived, believing that the entire ordeal was cooked up, a hoax created by Johnson, if you will. In the years after the reporting of this incident, many would continue to debate the merits of Val Johnson's claim, with some believing that it came from a place of truth, and others believing that Johnson had cooked up the entire thing from scratch. For the first few months after the sighting, Johnson would appear sporadically on TV and speak to reporters, primarily those that reached out to him and started asking him questions. But he always chose to let his claim speak for itself. He disliked the attention that the story was bringing to him and his family, and after a few months, he would begin to withdraw from the public. After all, he had never really gone and sought out the spotlight. The spotlight had simply found him. According to Johnson, quote, "I looked up at the sky and said, well shucks, what happened? And then I shuffled on with my life." Johnson would remain pretty mum about the encounter, and began to settle back into his regular routine shortly afterwards. He worked for the Marshall County Sheriff's Office for a bit longer, but eventually moved with his family to Wisconsin. There, he became the police chief for a small town, but budget issues eventually led to his removal from his post. After that, he struggled to find employment in law enforcement, and he would bounce around jobs as a security guard and customer service phone operator for a period of time. Nowadays, Johnson is happily retired, and he spends his days with his wife, kids, grandchildren, and even great-grandchildren. While he still doesn't seek out the spotlight, and hasn't for decades, he does not seem to shy away from his claims. Val Johnson is remembered as a bit of a cult figure in the northwest corner of Minnesota, and is still remembered as the UFO guy by some locals. His name is often brought up by those in UFO circles, where his claim remains one of the most credible public encounters with supposed UFOs to date. Johnson has had his story repeated in numerous books, documentaries, and even fictional programs, with it recently being adapted as a plot point in the second season of the FX series Fargo. Yet, despite there still being so much interest in Johnson's story nearly four decades later, he remains almost as non-curious as he was back in the summer of 1979. Speaking to reporters just a few years ago, in 2015, Johnson stated, quote, "I saw a ball of light. I drove toward it, and suddenly it was in the car with me. It's unexplainable, and will remain so. I'm happy with my mental stability. If anything, it's a story to tell at the bar, and that's it." I would like to end the episode on a note from Johnson himself. In the following audio clip, you'll hear Johnson, who is standing beside his wife, answer a question from That's Incredible co-host, John Davidson.
Now, since that incredible experience that has shocked us all, have you had any other experiences, any other close encounters?
No, sir, no.
Had you had any before this?
No, this is the first one.
Well, how has it changed your life?
Well, it's brought our family unit closer together.
Because it scared everybody so much, you mean?
Well, there was a lot of people confused about it and a lot of unusual stories that came out about it. But it's brought us closer together as a family unit.
Was it a religious experience for you? Many times these events are a religious experience.
Upon reflection afterwards, it's been about 6 months now. Upon reflection, we've kind of come to the conclusion that perhaps the Creator has made other things that we can't readily see or readily identify, and perhaps this is one of the things we encountered out in the road.
Certainly a humbling experience. Thank you, Roseanne and Val, for sharing your feelings about your experience with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What if there was a 50% off sale happening every time you went shopping for razors? Shaving with Harry's is kind of like that. They offer premium blade refills as low as $2 each. That's up to 55% off compared to the price of the Gillette Fusion Pro Shield. Personally, I love shaving with Harry's because it's an affordable way to get a solid shave. Nothing's worse than a crummy, overpriced razor, but Harry's believes that everyone deserves quality shaving supplies at a fair price. They don't inflate blade prices or add unnecessary features to the razors like flex balls or heated handles, tactics that the leading brands have used to inflate prices for decades. Harry's team combines a simple ergonomic design with 5 sharp blades, and they cut out the middleman and ship directly to you, saving you both time and money. And you could feel good about your purchase, because Harry's offers a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Harry's has an amazing offer for listeners of my show. New customers can get $5 off of a trial set at harrys.com/unresolved. You'll get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover. Join the millions of guys and gals who are already saving money and go to harrys.com/unresolved to claim your offer. Now, let's return to the show. Art Bell was born in June of 1945 in Jacksonville, North Carolina. From an early age, Art was obsessed with radio as an art form. He became a licensed radio operator at the age of 13, and remained interested in broadcasting through his commitment to the United States Air Force as a young adult, heading overseas to serve in the Vietnam War as a medic. While there, he began operating a pirate radio station, where his rebellious nature began to take over, with him constantly playing anti-war music that was not played on the US-ran stations. Art would eventually return to the States and began attending the University of Maryland, where he briefly pursued a degree in engineering. However, the lure of his one true passion caused him to drop out, and he began pursuing a career in radio in earnest. Over the next decade or so, he would work for various radio and TV stations all across the West Coast, and was eventually able to land a radio show of his own. The only catch was that it was a radio station in Las Vegas, Nevada, and the time slot was a 5-hour window in the middle of the night. That would not deter Art Bell, though. West Coast AM was launched in 1978, and became Art's first flagship radio program, where he could talk about politics and basically whatever else came to mind for at least 5 hours a night. He became known for his rather unfiltered opinions, and that seemed to express itself in the format of the show. There was essentially no screen calling, which would sometimes cause the show to derail entirely, but kept the show rather fluid in nature. West Coast AM would continue to evolve over time, as did its name. In 1988, Art Bell changed the name of his program, and Coast to Coast AM was born. Like its original name, Coast to Coast AM would begin to shed the skin of its original format, and became less about politics or society at large. Rather, it began to focus in on the obscure topics that other radio programs were not talking about, the weird and bizarre topics that were frowned upon by other broadcasters. On Coast to Coast AM, listeners could call in with all of their creepy, unusual, bizarre stories. Things like government conspiracies, ghost stories, paranormal experiences, etc. You name it, and Coast to Coast AM likely covered it at some point. But out of the several thousand calls received by Coast to Coast AM over the years, one in particular continues to attract attention and divide listeners. I'm talking, of course, about the infamous Area 51 caller. On September 11th, 1997, Coast to Coast AM was in the middle of its regular Thursday night broadcast. Art Bell, who hosted the show from his home in the middle of the Nevada desert, had been accepting calls that night without issue. That is, until he received one call that would prove to be his most infamous of all time.
Online, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Hi. I don't have a whole lot of time.
Well, look, let's begin by finding out whether you're using this line properly or not.
Area 51.
Yeah, that's right. Were you an employee or are you now?
A former employee.
Former employee.
I was let go on a medical discharge about a week ago, and I've kind of been running across the country. Oh, man, I don't know where to start. They'll triangulate on this position really, really soon.
So you can't spend a lot of time on the phone. So give us something quick.
Okay. Okay. What we're thinking of as aliens are they're extra dimensional beings that an earlier precursor of the space program made contact with. They are not what they claim to be. They have infiltrated a lot of aspects of the military establishment, particularly the Area 51. The disasters that are coming, the government knows about them, and there's a lot of safe areas in this world that they could begin moving the population to now, Art.
But they're not doing anything.
They are not. They want the major population centers wiped out so that the few that are left will be more easily controllable.
Discharge.
I started getting...
From here, the radio feed broadcasting Art Bell's show seemed to drop entirely. It would be several seconds before the backup feed kicked in, and by that point, the original caller was gone.
In some way, something knocked us off the air, and we're on a backup system now.
It's the government, or...
I don't know.
It has to be something, though.
Well, did you hear... Now, you tell me, because you were listening.
That was awful strange.
There was a really weird guy on the air when it went off?
Yeah. Real weird out.
Like, going... Sort of sounding paranoid, schizophrenic.
Like crying and everything.
Yeah. And how far into the conversation was it when it went off?
Just a couple, about 15, 20 seconds, I'd say.
Oh, you guys you really missed a call then, and I've got a feeling somebody didn't want you to hear it.
Yeah. Because it was really strange. All of a sudden, I'm hearing Mark Furman, and when I went out.
That's right. Well, the network, of course, went immediately to a backup tape while we tried to figure out what blew up here.
Uh-huh.
So that's what you heard happen.
Uh-huh.
And then we're now on a backup link system.
Uh-huh.
To be on the air at all right now. So, well, I'm telling you.
Am I on the air right now?
You're on the air right now. Well, you better be, yes.
And,
where are you, by the way?
I'm in Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah, I called the other night, and, I wanted to ask two things.
Real quick.
Well, I wanted to say one thing, and I wanted to ask another.
Real quick.
I wanted to ask if you could play that, remote viewing, one when you were in, while you go to Egypt.
Yes.
And also, I wanted to know, all this stuff about, like, Area 51, if it's, like, the government's trying to put it out there like that, so, like, some other place isn't being watched as much.
In other words, it's a big decoy. I see what you're saying. Aaron, apparently...
This call would become absolute fodder for skeptics over the next several years, inspiring newspaper articles in the Washington Post and stories in other major publications. Which, in return, just attracted more attention to Coast to Coast AM, and Art Bell's listenership continued to explode into the millions. Some believed that the phone call itself was real, having been made by an Area 51 insider, whose disclosure of information had caused the satellite transmitting Art Bell's radio program to temporarily shut down. Others believed that this was all a hoax, a publicity stunt, meant to increase Art Bell's listenership, which, rightfully, it did. This belief would not fade over the next several months, especially as multiple people began calling in to claim credit for the call. This included a particularly convincing call to Art Bell about 7 months after the original call, on April 28th, 1998.
The East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. You didn't disconnect me before, did you?
Were you on earlier tonight?
No, not towards the end of the last hour, you said, East of the Rockies, you're on the air, and your voice was immediately replaced by the operator saying, your party has not connected.
Well, see, as you can now tell, I don't screen calls, so
right.
What happened, obviously, was that I answered the phone just at the very instant that you had been ringing as long as they were going to let you ring.
Yeah.
And so that occurs, obviously, sometimes I go to a line and... It's dead, nobody's there, and that's what's happened. You know, we're on the cusp there. Anyway, I'm glad you made it back through.
Yeah, you got all my paranoia buttons running. I always get very nervous when I call you. I'm Brian. I hung up on you last week.
Oh, I see.
And I just figured, damn the torpedoes. I'll just do this and let the chips fall where they will.
All right.
Everybody, I am the Area 51 caller. That's my statement, and let you or whatever tear it apart.
You claim you're the Area 51
caller? I am the man.
How do you account for the fact, Area 51 caller,
okay,
that part of the way through your spiel, the satellite went down?
I have no idea, and it scared the heebie-jeebies out of me that night. I've called a number of times on your specialty line nights doing different, you know, kind of wacky characters, and that's all that one was supposed to be. And if the call had been completed, it would have been ancient history by now.
Has it occurred to you, as Barbara Marks Hubbard suggested tonight, that perhaps, if you're really what you say you are, you created the reality of the rest of the situation and took down my satellite.
That scares the heebie-jeebies out of me because it means that what I was saying was somehow correct and it was fabrication kind of...
Creating a reality.
Yeah, if that was the case, I humbly apologize to you because I love your show and the last thing I would ever want to do is...
Knock me off the air.
So, what can I do to prove my claim here?
Well, I guess you could give us a little of what you gave us then so that we could hear it and know it to be you.
Are you sure you want me to do that, Art?
I'm positive.
Don't. Art, please. I don't want you to ask me to do this. If I start doing that guy,
you're right about that. Now, that let's just take that little sample that you just gave us, so that we don't alter some sort of hard little reality here at the end of the program, and we'll let the callers be the judge.
Okay.
All right.
I thank you for this opportunity. This has just been driving me bananas for months, and I didn't know what you wanted me to do. I knew it was very difficult for me to prove to you. But I just thank you for your patience in dealing with me up to this time.
All right, it's quite all right. Thank you. Fritz in Phoenix, as a matter of fact, called and said, oh, yes, that's him. Somebody else said, oh, no. Now he has done his little Area 51 caller IMO, or the real thing, depending on what you think. And so we'll leave it up to all of you. That is what you think.
That second call was made by a man named Brian Glass, who would go on to become a pretty renowned comic book writer. He came forward months after the original call, and as you heard, provided a authentic-sounding replication of the original caller's cries. But over the years, Brian could provide no rational explanation for why Art Bell's satellite transmission had been lost on the evening of September 11th, 1997. Leading to the belief among coast-to-coast AM listeners that, if he was behind the call, he had potentially unearthed a massive government conspiracy. Of course, 9/11 itself would happen just a few years later, happening exactly 4 years to the day after the original phone call, on September 11th, 2001. This coincidence was not lost on Art Bell's listeners, to whom it was like gasoline on an already existing flame. To his credit, though, Art Bell never really seemed to put too much stock into the original phone call, and, as always, allowed his listeners to come to their own conclusions. Art Bell would continue to host Coast to Coast AM until October of 1998, before retiring abruptly amidst a family crisis. He could not stay away for long, though, returning to the airwaves a short time later. He would continue to host Coast to Coast AM and another assortment of shows on and off over the years, up until his death in 2018. The story of the Area 51 caller remains a highly scrutinized one in online circles, even among conspiracy theorists who are divided on whether or not it was a legitimate call or a total hoax. Despite comic book writer Brian Glass providing a reasonable explanation for it being a stunt, it remains unconfirmed who the original caller was, exactly. And, in honor of Art Bell, I'll let you be the judge on whether or not this was a real call or an entertaining hoax. Nonetheless, to me at least, it remains likely that this story will remain unresolved.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.